What's going on? This is Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones and my lovely co-host, Erica Tolbert. Say hi to the folks, Erica.
Hello, everyone. Where's the intro?
I know I forgot to put the intro on this week. I'll put it back on. I didn't feel like fishing around for it today. Tonight, plus we have... you know, we got a lot we're going to talk about. So if you're watching this on Facebook Live or YouTube, please do us a favor. Click that share button, share it in all the groups that you're in. We're not going to be on very long tonight. You know, we got some other situations brewing. I want to give the people, I want to give everybody an update on the Independence Day Project. So we just did a render of the Independence Day Project. I'm really liking what I see. Was able to find maybe a glitch or two. So tighten that up. And the Independence Day Project is going to be, how shall I say, the movie itself is done, but in terms of ready to, you know, see in local theaters and local community centers, the Independence Day Project is coming to the, so be on the lookout for a promo over the next few days because that was the holdup. You know, unfortunately, sometimes when you're dealing with this type of software that we're dealing with, it causes a lot of glitches. And just when you think it's done, it undoes a lot of things and you have to go back to the drawing board. But, you know, like I said before, can't stop, won't stop. We won't quit. We won't stop. So, you know, family, make sure that you stay tuned. Stay tuned so you can check out the Independence Day Project. It's coming. We're going to actually have a small showing here in Philadelphia locally. For the members, the people that were part of the movie production, people who had some influence and people who assisted with the movie, whether you were interviewed, whether you provided a contribution. So be on the lookout for that invite. You should see something tonight, specifically after you get off this broadcast. Family, also make sure, like I said, that you share this broadcast with other people because we need for this platform to grow. We need for the platform to grow because we are speaking the truth to the people from our perspective, an Afrocentric perspective, and that's rarely something that we rarely do. We rarely take pride in doing things from our perspective. For some strange reason, it is the propaganda has been so successful and the social engineering has been so successful, it has convinced us that we ought to be shameful and apologetic when expressing our views or expressing our greatness from a particular vantage point. So we want to kill that particular tactic, and we want to destroy that from the gate. You know, we want y'all to understand that we are proud and unapologetically Black and unapologetically African, and we're unapologetically speaking from our platform. So, Erica, you what'd you do this weekend? I always start off asking that, don't I?
Nothing. I unplugged from everything since the weekend with my baby,
that's
my family.
That's what's up. Family time's important. You know, I think it's underrated. I know that's one of the things that I missed is spending a lot more time with my family, specifically when I had to go into the cave and work on this project. You know, and it's noticeable because when I see family. I mean, my family, they are the worst when it comes to letting you know that your presence has been missed. Everybody, every time I pop up somewhere, it's like, oh, what's going on, stranger? Oh, it's nice for you to, you know, I go to see my godchildren, you know, the mother be like, well, hug your godfather. You don't never know when you'll see him again. would you say, Sister Camille, Facebook is interrupting me? Yeah, Facebook has been glitchy. So hopefully, you know, we'll be able to, hopefully the signal will hold. I don't get me lying about what's going on with Facebook. Facebook has been banging with us and doing disruptive things to us for quite some time. And it doesn't even matter where the location is, just the message. So I'm pretty sure that they have several profiles that they throw those new algorithms in and they disrupt us to make sure that we can't get our message out. But like I said before, we won't be stopped. Peace, Brother Bowers. I see you over there in YouTube Live. And if y'all don't want to watch an interrupted feed, y'all can go to the YouTube link. You know, if you want, I'll put the YouTube link up. But if you want to watch an uninterrupted feed, the YouTube link is far more reliable. But tonight we're gonna get into some things. This weekend, all I did was stay in and repair the damage to my movie project. I didn't do much, but work on that. So, but there's some interesting things that happened this weekend, and some things I woke up to on my news feed this morning. One of the things I woke up to, well, I was awakened to this morning, was this video of, let me see, I might be able to pull it up on my phone. But I was awakened to a video this morning where, you know, apparently these women were all defending Roy Moore. You know, I'm trying to make sure I find the feed. If I can find the feed, I get like a million and one inboxes on Facebook. So these women were defending Roy Moore. Well, no. I'm talking about this particular video. It was one particular, well, actually you're right. But I think I find it more offensive that, you know, I mean, I find it offensive anyway than anybody would defend her, but that's not really the point that I'm making. I was trying to find, and that's what I'm saying, I'm trying to find the video. And you're right, Erica, women and men, I don't want to make it seem like I'm attacking anybody. but what we've been dealing with, and I can't find a damn video, but I was going to play the video. I was going to upload the video and let y'all hear the defense that people were making, basically stating that, you know, 30 years ago, it was okay for people, for grown men to molest young women. You know what I'm saying? Or for a 30-year-old to have sexual intercourse and, you know, or to be sexually promiscuous with, you know, hold on 1 second. I got to turn this damn thing down.
You know what I'm saying? Or
I got to figure this part out, Erica. Hold on. We're having all types of technical difficulties tonight. But anyway, that was the point the point I was making about the video wasn't the fact that it's been going on. We know that it's going on. But the fact of the matter is that there's a serious senatorial race going on in Alabama right now, and that there's still people who are justifying Roy Moore's behavior. You know what I'm saying? And here's the crazy part about it. The crazy part about this particular thing that we're dealing with and that we're seeing is that the question of morality is coming in. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, Erica, you know how we always have this conversation about when you're at war, do morals count? You know what I'm saying? Hey, Sister Misty, how are you? Peace and blessings to you, sis. And we start questioning and asking questions about morality. What's your take on that? When you're at war, and right now we have to be clear, the system of white supremacy is at war with itself. It's liberals, the far left and the far right are at war with one another. As, you know, and they're warring on us, but it's more like a war of attrition with us. They're literally at war with one another. Do you think that morals should come into play when you're at war with somebody or engaged in warfare? All right, try this again. Erica.
I'm sorry. I was on mute.
All right.
I'm sorry, family. I was on mute. Especially for the people you're at war with do not have a moral compass. There's no way that you can win a war and have morals against someone that doesn't have morality.
Right. So here's the deal, right? Here's the deal. We're talking about because often, you know, that often the thing that we deal with, you know, in regards to our community, when we start talking about warfare, a lot of times, or just being a community at war, a lot of times you'll have members of our community start, you know, having moral vantage or moral viewpoints. And I always ask the question, when you are a community at war, or when you are a nation at war, do you have, you know, well, better perspective, can you name a time in history where a war was won based on morality? Based on morality, based on free, can you this terminal, can you tell me, go to a time where war was won based on morals and moral integrity, things of that nature? And I can't think of a time that war was won when we were at, you know, when anybody was dealing with just on a moral basis. You go back in history and you see Winston Churchill said, I'm not worried about, you know, how history is going to, you know, I'm not worried about history is going to be, how I'm going to be revealed in history, because I'm going to be the one who writes it. You know, Napoleon stated that history is a fable both agreed upon on. So basically what you got is people, you win the war and then you go back and you do revisionist history to make yourself look like you had valor, that you had integrity and things of that nature. But no war is won without people being in the muddy end of the field. And for some strange reason, as a community, you know, we can't seem to fathom that concept. And I think that, well, I'm gonna ask you first, why do you think that is? I know why I think it is, but why do you think it is that we can't get over the moral compass when it comes to addressing the fact that our community is being warred upon? Is the mute button on?
Was that a question for me?
Yeah, it's a question for you.
No, because you said you're going to ask questions. I wasn't sure if you wanted, where you were directing it at me. But the main reason why we have the moral compass that we have, there are two things. A, because we have good hearts. I don't care what anyone says. When I look at us as a whole, Black people of African descent, we naturally have good hearts. We have good deeds. Right. We have best intentions for everything. It's just in us. It's embedded in us. Secondly, it's because we were given that moral compass of the turner of the cheek, the pray now and God us, rescue us later, and well, we just this time we have on this earth is short, because we're looking for another life in heaven. We will turn the other cheek to make it to heaven every time. We were taught to endure hell now to be in heaven later.
You know what's funny about that is I was watching my man Mitchell Chance early, and anybody, Chance, check out my brother Mitchell Chance, you know. He does his podcast from his page, Mitchell and Kuma. And a chance to check out my brother, when he was talking about that earlier in the conversation he was having with the family, was basically about why is it that you know, why do Black people hate being Black first, you know? And I was sitting there wondering that same fucking question, like, why is it that every other race can be race first, community first, there first, this, that, and the other? You know, I drive past, when I drive to the northeast part of Philadelphia, do my shopping sometimes, because, you know, I like to go out there, you know, and do a little shopping. I drive past this flea market, and it's an Irish flea market, and it says the old Irish something, but it's like, we can't say the old Black this or the old African that without Black people jumping over, talking to us and letting us know that we're racist. And I know that part of it is that cognitive dissonance that's been beaten into our people and beaten into our community over the years. I know that part of it is the fact that, you know, we just got a lot of scared Negroes who themselves want to be a part of, oops, I posted in the wrong damn group. I know that we got it some part in dealing with the fact that we have a situation where, you know, Black folks are just scared. But I honestly base it on cowardice. You know what I'm saying? I honestly base it on cowardice within our community. You know, several people are talking about the comments that Roy Moore had made earlier about canceling all the amendments except for the 10th one, basically going back into undoing, you know, equal rights for all people, for anybody to basically what he wants is unobtainable rights for white men, and that's it. Everybody else can go back on the plantation. Women can go back into the kitchen, be barefoot and pregnant, this, that, and the other. And we already figured, I mean, come on, man. He's one state over from Arkansas. Now, Arkansas, you just had a presidential candidate running, Mike Huckabee. You can all look this up. Mike Huckabee was running for president. One of the things he said was that in his state, the Dred Scott decision was still the law of the land. So, you know, this is how they think. And when I say they, I'm being very clear. This is how white men think, white people think. All right, I'm not mincing words here. And unfortunately, it's how a lot of our Negro peons think, you know, in regards to that. So we have to, you know, be honest about that. We have to be honest about, you know, where this is headed. And we also have to be honest about why it is we're not fighting back. See, I'm one of those people that I'm not one of those bullshitters. You know what I mean? Because I think we have a lot of scholarly cowards in our community. And I'm just going to call it like it is. People who, you know, will challenge you to a debate, will challenge you to, you know, will go blow for blow and toe to toe with somebody of their own hue. But when that European comes in the room, all of a sudden I got to prove to that European that I'm more a scholarly than that European. I'm more dignified than the European. Then, you know, and I don't have to resort to barbaric measures as, you know, physical force in order to defend myself. When the European meets you with physical force first, whenever they go somewhere, they're coming with the tanks. They're coming with the guns. They're coming with the ammo. You know, they're locking people down. They're taking no prisoners when the European shows up. And then they bring their skilled, you know, they bring in the cavalry. Well, not just the cavalry, but they also bring in, you know, their peacekeepers. So they bring in, you know, their liaisons that go into your and come into your back yard and whisper sweet nothings into your ear, you know, like Greenpeace and all that. You know what I'm saying? They bring all those cats into your backyard. But, you know, we have got to stop being pussies when it comes to dealing with white supremacy. And what I mean by that is, you know, be able to stand up and say, damn, we can be race first. We can be for ourselves first. You know, there's nothing wrong with being race first. Family. Everybody else is race and community first. So even, you know, people who are not of a race, but an ethnicity, they are ethnicity first. You know, they are community first. And we need to start learning from that. You know, and not being ashamed and not being helped. Not being guilted or of how they like to guilt us into saying, well, what's good for y'all should be for everybody. It's funny y'all say that shit because, and I often have this conversation, like there's a Latina student in my classroom and she was really butthurt, you know what I'm saying? When I was talking about, you know, racism, white supremacy and how all white males are predators until proven otherwise. She was really hurt by that. And, you know, as black people, you should be, you know, more understanding because you go through this, you've been discriminated against, so y'all should know how it feels, so you shouldn't let anybody else know how it feels. I said, it's funny that you mentioned that, because everybody could tell us that, and then when we say, yeah, you're right, we have been discriminated, they tell, well, literally, I need to stop crying and get over that bullshit. So don't nobody give a fuck, they just use it in their arsenal against us. And we're just dumb enough and gullible enough to think that if we go along to get along long enough, they'll invite us in. They'll let us off the plantation yard and into the house. We can have some apple pie and we can sit there and talk about one day having our white picket fences and sharing, you know, properties on the block with them. That's bullshit, family. It's not happening. It's not happening. Everybody else is race first. Everybody else is culture first. Everybody else is about their feet. And it's time we need to get on that train and stop being apologetic about it. Morals have no role to play in warfare. When I see people talk about being morally right, morally convicted, if anybody can see my face, this is my look. Because I feel like I'm wasting my time talking to you. I feel like I'm wasting my time talking to you. If you feel like that you want to win the battles of moralities and you want to have moral victories while they're kicking our asses all over the field, all right? You want to know, like, if this is a game of football and they were smacking you around, you need somebody on your team to smack back. You need somebody on your team. If the ref ain't going to call it, then you need to hit somebody with a low blow. I was watching a boxing match the other day. And one of the boxers was getting hit with low blows the whole fight, and the ref ain't called nothing. So one of the announcers was like, listen, sometimes if the ref ain't going to call it, then you got to start swinging low too. And that means you have to do whatever you have to do to win. That's winning the war. So when you talk about Roy Moore, right? Those women and men who defended Roy Moore, when they were defending Roy Moore today, that video that I saw today, they know damn well that it's terribly wrong for somebody to do it, because if somebody was to assault their daughter, you know, I'm pretty sure they would have an issue with that. they were looking to they were playing what's called the long game. You know, see, as Black people, we're still kind of new to this whole concept of racial politics and understanding those things. We are not, we have not taken the initiative to go further and to be patient and to not be impulsive. We have been taught and consistently passed down that being excitable, being impulsive, and being reactionary is the way that we should go to things, the way that we should handle problems. And emotion, yelling, screaming, loud, and getting hype and hyperventilating, cutting people off before they make their point, speaking over people. We've been taught that that's the proper way to politic. And that's just wrong. It doesn't work. You know, the proper way to politic, if you really want to talk about it, first of all, is to fall back, observe everything, take all the information in, and then make a discerned response to it. The best way to politic is to be proactive and think 10 steps ahead. And that's what they're doing with this Roy Moore thing. They're thinking 10 steps ahead. They're saving white supremacy, conservative Southern Christian values that they want to preserve. They give no fucks about how many people, because they will sacrifice their own people. See, white folk don't mind sacrificing their own people for the greater good of their community. Like it or not, the greater good of their community lies in somebody like Roy Moore being a senator in that state. Do you understand? Erica, this is your home state, ain't it? Alabama?
Yes, it is.
And, you know what I'm saying? So you know the politics of your state a little bit, right?
I know politics a little bit, only because I left Alabama when I was 17. So, yeah. I mean, it's like any other political state, where white people are battling to preserve white supremacy.
Right. And that's what it is. Now, as a question to the community, I have a question. Family, when do we start doing what we have to preserve or to create Black empowerment? You know what I'm saying? My brother Mag wrote Europeans in America because genetic shortcomings are evolving. Back in the day, the genetic barbaric ancestors' way of existing as a defense mechanism because of impending loss of claim as a majority here. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Globally speaking, I would always get into conversations with white supremacists. They would always inbox me when I was in these mixed groups. I try not to be in too many of them anymore. But in a lot of these mixed groups, I had a conversation with some of the members of the group, and they would always go back to citing statistics from Eastern Europe from like the year 2000, like the late 90s and 2000, and showing that the declining birth rate and the mortality rate, and that the population were losing people. And then it's come out recently here in the last few years in America that more white Americans are dying than being born. It's like the last 2-3 years. So, you know, they understand, you know, politically speaking, about the power grab. And as I said before, and as I say in the Independence Day Project, y'all need to make sure y'all check the Independence Day Project out. I'm trying to told you. What we talk about in that is the fact that, you know, the white community, you know, specifically white men, but white women too, they thoroughly believe in manifested destiny and eminent domain. And so they believe at winning at all costs, which is the message that we want to talk about tonight, winning at all costs. Because if you win the ground of moral, if you win a moral victory, a lot of people will say that Jesus Christ won a moral victory. You know, a lot of people who believe in the Bible, this, that, and the other. He didn't win that real victory down there back then that day. You know what I'm saying? That day he didn't, you know what I'm saying? When they put that spirit destiny in him, you know, I'm not trying to offend any Christians on the line, but I'm just trying to say, you know, moral victories only count and they really don't count. I don't know where anywhere in society where moral victories will really take you anywhere. Sister Elizabeth McGraw states, the abuse of women and children has always been tolerated and covered up. That's why Roy Moore is supported. Roy Moore's behavior is routine occurrence. And yes, in black homes too. Now, Elizabeth, I'm going to check you on this real quick. If this is the biggest problem I have right now, we're talking racial politics, and this goes to a lot of things I talk about. When the only tool we have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. The only tool that we have is a problem, and that, well, the only tool is I gotta make sure I correct black people that black people do shit too. You know, we know this. So why are you speaking this? This is exactly the mindset I'm talking about when I say that black people get on here apologizing, apologetic. We know. But do you hear white folks say, well, white people are bad too? I've never heard anybody white say that shit. Never. Always hear black people say that. Well, black people are wrong too. Cut that shit out. This is why black people are perceived as weak. Because yes, as Erica said, black people are the most morally compass people in the world. So of course we address our issues. Of course we address when we mess up. But we're the only ones. Asians don't fuck. When that police officer, the Asian police officer, shot a cop girly in New York a few years ago, the Asian community closed their damn stores out to go to New York to protest for Peter Liang. They didn't acknowledge, they said accident, one shot, two victims. That's what they said. They didn't say shit about it. Well, yeah, he was wrong for shooting a car girly for coming down the goddamn steps. He was wrong for having his gun out going upstairs in the stairwell. They didn't say nothing about that. But yet and still, we always have black people that want to run to the defense. And let me ask y'all something. You know, this is the same way as when the Charleston Nine got shot, right? Dylan Roe shot the nine parishioners in the church in Charleston. Don't you know that Negroes were jumping over each other at the press conference to forgive him? Now, let me ask you a question. Have you ever bumped into black people at church? That's one of the rudest moments. I was just in the church a few days ago, my cousin's funeral. Do you know how rude Negroes are in church to other black people? It's insane. They don't speak to you. They give you that fake-ass plastic smile. You know, they don't do shit for you. But let somebody white come in the building, all of a sudden we're tripping over each other. It's proximity to whiteness that's our biggest problem. Our proximity to whiteness and wishing to be a part of that shit and wishing to be welcomed and seen as being benevolent. So we show up apologizing, you know, yes, black people are fallible too. We have to, come on, guys. There's always somebody in the room. Come on, guys. We have to be, we do things too. Who the fuck doesn't know that? Who doesn't know that we fuck up too? Players fuck up. I'm sorry, Erica. I'm running along and I know you have to go soon. But that's my whole issue with the whole concept when we start talking about those things. When we start talking about those issues, when we start addressing white supremacy, we start addressing things in our community, you know, we can't keep saying, all right, Elizabeth, I'm giving you a chance to explain your point. Yes, I do know that the behavior is an occurrence, but when you have to, and yes, in black homes too, that was unnecessary. We're not talking about black homes right now. We're talking about Roy Moore, okay? So let me read y'all my sister Erica McGraw's post again, her response again. The abuse of women and children has always been tolerated and covered up. First of all, Elizabeth, I'm gonna stop you right there. We are talking on a specific platform of race first discussion. We're having a race first discussion. I do not include white women, white children, white men in conversations with black people. Our issues are totally different. Our issues are divided by that color line. And we have to stop playing that game like some things blur that line. It doesn't. Because let me tell you something. If a white child sexually abuses a black child, that white child is sent to therapy. That white child is given every benefit of the doubt. When a black child makes the mistakes of putting his hand on the butt of a white girl, I had two clients right now that just got off probation and one just had a case thrown out. All right? Because based on that particular issue, based on that particular issue in regards to, sexual innuendos with, you know, crossing that color line. So let's not talk that blank and see, Elizabeth, we're going to have a conversation about politics soon. This is why I don't fuck with politics, because in politics, we got too many black people that blur the lines and want that inclusion, want to play that game of you know, want to play that game of conformity. We don't do conformity over here. This is black independence from a black nationalist perspective. So, and I'm not trying to put you out there, my sister. But you came to the king's court, and the king had to address the matter that was on the table. So, no love, no harm, no foul, sister. No, I still got love for you. But the bottom line is, family, we have to stop being apologetic about being black, and then also we have to stop throwing each other under the bus, because no other community does it. You know what I'm saying? People to this day, Mike Brown, none of those police officers that covered the shit up, none of the members on that jury, you know, that allowed for, you know, that police officer to go free, none of them apologized. To this day, George Zimmerman has never offered an apology for killing Trayvon Martin. Never said he felt bad about it. Never said he felt sorry about it. Never said he wished it didn't happen. All right? Rakim Boyd, none of those police officers that killed her never said sorry about that. Never came up. And in fact, nobody from their respective communities has come forward in large numbers and said, you know, that's fucked up what they did. In fact, many people came out on social media, such as Facebook, and basically stated that, you know, okay, the judge, the grand jury has made their decision. It's time for y'all to let that shit go. The jury has spoken. Time for y'all to let that shit go. You know what I'm saying? So, excuse me. Let's stop playing this game. This because it's weak. I wouldn't respect you if I slapped you, and then you didn't hold me accountable. And somebody said, why didn't you smack them back? Well, black people smack people too. I wouldn't respect you. And that's what I'm saying. Morally speaking, morals do not win wars. All the shit that went, you want to know how America got into World War II? They let Japan bomb Pearl Harbor because they saw it as a way to get in. They sacrificed all those American lives in Hawaii just to get into the fucking war. Do you want to know how Hitler rose to power? The Bush family cartel, the Harriman family cartel, the Wells Fargo bank institution, that's how they got into it. That's how they did it. All right? There was no moral ground. In fact, the Ford company, you know, Ford Motors. Do you know that they sued the American government because during World War II they bombed one of the factories over there? Do you know that? So, and them bombing the factories over there, they bombed the Ford factory in World War II. Ford sued the American government. What factory did they bomb? They bombed the factory that was providing the engines. I believe it was the engines for all of the Nazis. You can't make this shit up. There's no morals there. There's no integrity there. So let's not pretend it's that way. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Exactly, Brother Sterling Brown. We got a lot of people that plays the game of rattling the fence and too afraid to address the issue at hand. The issue at hand, family, is that in times of war, everybody leaves with dirt under their nails and blood on their hands. So if you're not willing to have dirt on your nails or blood under your hands, then you need to stop pretending and stop pump faking like you're part of this particular struggle. It's okay. I'm not mad at you if you're not. Just be real about it so we know who we're dealing with. All right? Now, there was another situation that happened today. There was a young man that was bullied. I believe his name was, what was his name? What was this child's name? Hold on one second. This child named something Jones, Keaton Jones. Right? Y'all familiar with the Keaton Jones story? And here's another situation where we have, where a lot of people in our community, you know, playing that, I want to show white folk how sincere I am, how much I care about their problems, how I'm so above the issue of race and discussion, things of that nature. A lot of black celebrities helped and gave money to a crowd fund, from what I understand. Do y'all know that when they did a little research, a little digging on this dude, that they found out that he was from one of those white supremacist families, you know, that dons the Confederate flags and, you know what I'm saying, is out there, you know, calling people all types of niggas and this, that, and that. And you got black celebrities rushing to that shit. This is stuff I'm talking about. So this is now the time, family, for us to start pushing toward black liberation. And what I mean by that is this is the time for us to stop fence treading, stop being apologetic, stop being afraid. We have to get on board and on code right now, because the attention is not on us. The attention right now in the white community, they're having a civil war. I've been telling y'all for the last 6 months, actually, since Trump got elected, that there was a civil war in the white community. And this is why you had the Charlottesville incident. It wasn't a bunch of black people fighting each other. You had that one dumb Negro that decided he wanted to go down there, and he got his ass twisted with those pipes, because they don't show up talking about hands up, don't shoot. They showed up with fucking, fighting the Highlander or some shit. They showed up like William of Orange. They had shields and they had pipes and they went to war. And they beat the hell out of that brother. And you know what? I hope everybody learned from that lesson. That brother damn near died. You know, I hope everybody learned from that lesson. And from what I understand, didn't they try to charge that brother afterwards? They beat his ass next to the police station and then tried to give him some charges? So that was the internal war between white supremacists. That was the internal war between white supremacists. See, they're focused on each other right now. They're focused on going after, you know, so-called illegals right now. Right now is the perfect time, black people, to get our shit together. See, we are not a priority right now to the system of white supremacy. To the powers that be, we're not a priority. One, they see how disorganized we are, so they're not even worried about us being a threat to their dominance. They're not worried about us. This is the perfect time for us to start going to small communities, small black-controlled communities, and taking over. I've long since told everybody that I believe that fighting gentrification in the cities, I think it's a wash. You know what I'm saying? I think it's a wrap for that, because they've been putting in plans for gentrification for the last 50 years. They're just implementing them now. And when you see new street signs, and you see the infrastructure changing community, they've already gotten to your politician. We got a politician right here, Cindy Bass in Philadelphia, right now, who is working on a pro-gentrification platform. I want to make that clear. And check it out. She has this thing right now where she's putting up this legislation to thwart stop and go. Do y'all want to know where that came from? That legislation came from the fact that white folk are moving into gentrified areas, gentrified neighborhoods, and they are in fear because, you know, you got a lot of winos and cats that's outside drinking wine and cheap liquor and hang outside those spots and cheap beer. They're drinking Thunderbird and fucking Silver Bullet out there inside them drink. And they're just hanging around laying out. They're never really hurting anybody, but they might panhandle or whatever. But the bottom line is, white folk moving around here don't want that shit in their neighborhood. That's why they're moving towards stop and goes. And that's why Cindy Bass, our supposedly, you know, city councilwoman, is out there putting that up. You know, a waste of fucking time. If black people are really offended by stop and goes, then stop and go. Stop going to them. Bottom line. You don't need no politician to tell you that that the glass shield that they put up, you know, is offensive. Because that's the whole push, that supposedly the glass shield that they put up is offensive to members of black men. We've been saying that shit for the last 15, 20 years. It's offensive that we have black people in our communities that allow for fucking 20 stores to be in for 15 stores to be in a 20 square block radius and not one of them be black owned. That is what we really should be offended by, and the fact that we keep, you know, making a pilgrimage to these places every day. You know, I did a lecture at Cheney a few years ago, and one of the students told me she had a conversation with a Dominican store owner at the corner of her block. And he told her that he's a millionaire because black people don't like to cook. This is not me, Cheney, this is her. He said this man makes $1 million a year off his corner store because black people don't cook. And see, when we start having conversations about black people in commerce, I tell you all the time, it's about where you spend your money. And we make, and think about it, that one corner store, the millionaire, and if you take, if you go, like where I live right now, I live in North Philly. Here we are, to be precise. I'm not telling y'all my block because if I catch stalkers outside, they catch, you know. So, but got a Dominican store in this corner, one around a corner from me, one a block, a half a block down from there, and another one, a two block, another one, another block down. All right? And if we just, and if we start talking about taking it, I'm talking about going down Butler Street. They literally went on Gratz and Butler Street, and then one on 18th and Butler. Now, if anybody knows, Gratz and Butler and 18th and Butler is a half a block apart. You got two thriving Dominican stores right there on the corner. Two thriving stores. Excuse me. Then you go down to 17th Street, and there's another Dominican store. And then across the street from the Dominican store, there is a Chinese store on one corner. Then there's another Chinese store, like three doors to the left on the other half of the block. And they're still in business. I just gave y'all a corridor. I didn't even get to the other end of my block where there's another, you know what I'm saying, set of stores. I didn't even give y'all that. And the only thing we really own around my damn neighborhood is bars. Bars and barbershops. That's the only thing I see black people that own around my in my neighborhood. So we have to start talking about where we put our money. If we get black businesses in your neighborhood, this is why I say to fight the gentrification, I don't know, we have a defeated mindset in our community. So defeated mindset was like, you know, the defeated mindset takes us to saying, man, what you want? You want to open a store? All right, that's what I thought then. I'm going to go down into this Dominican store and get this bullshit. I'm going to go to this Chinese store and get this poison-ass fried rice, refried rice and gravy and shit with all the extra MSG. You know, that's the defeated mindset, and that's what we're working from. And see, that's the problem with why we're doing that, family. We really need to start building towards black independence. And what I mean by black independence, for some of y'all, it's like, and we even talk about this in the film. My sister Tanya Harrington makes a very, very strong point. Black people need to see things already built, need to see things already done in order to give to it. In other words, you already need to see the success story. Other communities see the potential in the egg. See, we got to wait till the chicken is full grown and full fed before we start feeding the chicken. They see the potential in the egg, and they start feeding that egg. And once they start feeding that egg, you know what I'm saying? That's when you start to see the fruits of the benefits that come out from the investment. So right now, like right, black people, right now, there's a big push in the black community for everybody to jump on Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. And I'm real hesitant because I saw what happened with I saw what happened when that shit collapsed in 2008. Saw what happened in 2000. And, you know, not a lot of people are real literate. Do y'all know that the people that's doing that, a lot of the people that started Bitcoin, that they have been in and out of jail? Do y'all know that for creating a different type of currency? Do y'all know they've been in and out of jail? Some of them are still in jail. The people that created Bitcoin, they still can't find the creator of Bitcoin. Let me explain to y'all real quick the Bitcoin. One of the things that y'all might want to consider with Bitcoin. All right. For the last 45 years, there's been this talk to move people off of paper currency, paperback, metal-backed currency, paper currency. To get people onto a digital currency. First, everybody, the move was to credit cards, right? But then the move became to digital. Now, let me explain to you what happens when all of your currency is digital. And right now, in America, over 90% of cash transactions are digital. You don't even really see your money. I know because I barely see mine. I make a phone call, I check my bank account, my shit is smaller than it was before I made that phone call. But you don't have it in your hand. There's no cash in hand. They're trying to remove that so they can tax all currency, all transactions. If you go digital, there's no more hand-to-hand transactions. How do you pay to get a haircut? Who do you pay to cut your lawn? You have to have a. And once you say, well, I'm a PayPal it to you, Now there's a digital record of that. There's a footprint to that. Once you say, I'm going to use the Cash App, don't matter. There's still a footprint to that. So if the IRS ever wanted to check that shit, they could follow your digital footprint in terms of transactions. Well, what do you think happens if you go to a straight cryptocurrency? First of all, it's not regulated. You don't even know how much shit's worth. It changes on a daily basis. Now, I don't know enough about it to tell people to refer, but I'm always cautious about shit that sounds too good to be true. And I see black people, and as a community family, we have to acknowledge how impulsive we are. We have to acknowledge how impulsive we are when it comes to dealing with shit like that. So be careful with that. A lot of things happens on Bitcoin. A lot of sex slavery takes place because Bitcoin is basically using the dark web. And a lot of terrorist activity can be attributed to you. So you can start Bitcoin cop. You can start working with Bitcoin. Next thing you know, the feds are knocking at your door. And you're like, oh, you know what I'm saying, not knowing what's going on. They got you caught up in some type of a conspiracy to commit some type of terrorism. You have no defense. And none of these Negroes talking to you can get you out of that. If the feds knocked on my door right now, it wouldn't be shit I could do. I can go down firing or I can get locked up. But whatever happens, if we want to be honest about the shit, it ain't really shit you can do. You know what I'm saying? We're not organized enough to handle nothing like that. We're not organized to handle a fucking block party. So we're not organized enough to handle the feds knocking on your door, banging on your door. All right? So we have to get to that point. And we have to understand that, you know, we have to start working towards that family. We have to start building towards black independence by, you know, coming from behind these computers, these shells, meeting up with the people in the community and building. You know, having real meetings, real plans taking place, you know, having real understanding about what's going on. So I'm not going to keep going on. If y'all have any questions in the group, I'll answer a few questions. You know what I'm saying? But and I'm about to sign off in a bit. But my brother Bowers made a point. He said, I seen Roy. Seeing Roy Moore's comment about canceling all the amendments. We talked about that earlier. Let me dig into that a little deeper. If anything that comes out of the mouths of these white supremacists surprises you, y'all need to really, you know, nothing should surprise you anymore about what they do and what they say. Nothing should surprise you. Nothing, not a damn thing, you know, to surprise you in regards to what they say, how they function, and how they operate. You know what I'm saying? It shouldn't surprise you. You should be aware of everything they do. Right now, like, if I heard that it was a goddamn flying saucer about to hit my goddamn roof, it wouldn't surprise me. I blame it on the white supremacists. They sent some signal up in the space, fucking around with aliens, and the aliens came down here. I would blame it on them. But nothing that happens from this point forward, it's a surprise. You should not be in shock in awe with anything that happens based on, you know, your dealings with the system of white supremacy. If you are at this point, then you're still hopelessly naive. And I'm not saying my brother Bowers is. I'm just saying anybody who is asking questions or and seeing surprised or seeing bothered by, you know, something that these white supremacists are talking about. Nothing should surprise you. Nothing. In fact, you know, you should be expecting this shit to get worse. And that's why I'm saying this is the perfect time for us to start building our black communities and start building up and re-upping and relocating and moving to places. You know, this is the time. This is that time. This is that time for us to start looking at, I mean, if your community is still black owned, then what y'all need to be doing is y'all need to be going down to those zoning meetings, and y'all need to be finding out what the 10-year plan is for your community, for your neighborhood, because there's a 10-year plan for every community. You have the city planners have the planning, you know, what they plan on doing in your area. I saw the one for my community. That's why I know it's a done deal for around here. They put that shit in the newspaper about what they plan on doing with this neighborhood. So they're gonna price everybody out. They're gonna zone everybody out. They're gonna price everybody out. It's a done deal for down here, for North Philly. This part down Erie Ave. It's a done deal. We need to start going to places and regrouping, you know, learn the battles that you should fight, the winnable battles. And don't, you know, I'm not going to have that moral victory where they, you know, there was a place one time in Center City, Philly, where they had this building. And this building was like a historic landmark, and this company wanted to buy it out, and they wanted to build a high rise, and they said no. So they built the high rise around the building. It's a moral victory, yeah. But who the fuck wants to be living in a place where, you know, where it was once a residential area, but now your building is, you probably got a laundromat, you probably got a market, whatever. Now you got to deal with rodents that you didn't have to deal with before. You have to deal with foot traffic you didn't have to deal with before. You have to deal with all these strangers all up and around your place every day. You didn't have to deal with that before. Who wants to do that? To say they want a moral victory. We can't afford to be fighting moral victories, family. And some of us are going to have to be able to get our hands dirty. That's just the bottom line. And you don't win a war with smiles, hugs, and good intentions. You win a war with people who are willing to do what is necessary to win the war. So until we find enough soldiers that are willing to do what's necessary to win the war, you know, then we're going to be struggling with trying to figure out, you know, our place in this world. And we won't have to worry too long, though, because they already have a final solution planned for us. It's just up to us to be ready, be proactive, so that when they show up with these extermination camps, when they show up after they keep going with the black identity extremists and labeling and trying to get us linked up with international terrorist regimes that they put in play, once we get together so that they can't put that on us, or that we can defend ourselves and our community. As we stand right now, we're not in position to do that. So family, with that said, I'm about to tune out. Thank you all for tuning in. Make sure y'all share this broadcast. Oh, one more thing, myself, Erica, have been talking about changing the date, the time and date of the show. So we're probably looking to switch to Wednesdays. We will be on this Wednesday to talk about the election, the Roy Moore election, the fallout from that, and have more details on that. Erica had to go. She has some personal things to deal with. I myself had some personal things to deal with, so I can't hang on as long as normal. So, family, with that said, as always, peace, love, this ain't Black Power. My love, family.